line to Richard Quigley, local political activist. Richard, you've been in the courts recently fighting, I guess, harassment from the sheriff's office and trying to discover some documentation around a Sergeant Devereaux, who's also been apparently with his fellow officers going after some of your friends. Is that accurate?
Well, that's my position. I sort of got a pre-ruling today that they're not convinced that there's any conspiracy going on, but we're not done yet.
So this has all been taking place in the municipal court of Judge Kelly. What have you been looking for, and what have you got?
Well, we've been looking for justice, and what we've gotten is patience, and I think that within that great patience that judge has shown, that we're gonna get as close to justice as one can have in a system. I don't know where it's going to go, man.
Well, what in fact you feel, what kind of evidence are you seeking to uncover regarding the deputy and his, the sergeant and his fellow officers?
Well, there's a story that developed from this Devereaux, and he claims that he has a confidential informant that puts me and a friend of mine who is not supposed to be around any sort of weapons in a situation where we were transferring weapons from another vehicle, which they can't describe, to her vehicle, which they seem to be able to describe, two people that they can't describe, by me and this lady who they can describe. So it's sort of, you know, and so his invisible friend has put forth these allegations that gave them what they believe to be reasonable suspicion to drag her out of her car and cuff her and haul her off to jail sometime later.
Is she still being charged with crimes?
The prosecution of the claims against her is being done very enthusiastically.
And as I remember, when we spoke about this about a month or two ago, your analysis of the case was that because they knew her to be a friend of yours, they were targeting her because of your own, refusal, sort of a petty thing, but, you know, from a sheriff, from one would think, your refusal to allow this Sergeant Devereaux, who works at the
Aptos substation for the sheriff's office.
Exactly. So, to park in a parking place that he himself has marked as a police parking place, which in fact apparently has no legal standing, and he...
Right. As a matter of fact, the testimony from the court from him is that the shopping center painted it that color, and they painted it red, put his name on it, and he did admit today under testimony that it was not illegal to park there. He claims that he doesn't really care if anybody does, but it was within a couple of weeks from the time. Of course, I was doing a lot more than just parking there. I was raising hell with the county about allowing to go in there and paint that curb red in the first place. But anyway, I got arrested shortly after he got fed up with that. And then it was kind of interesting because I don't know what the legal ramifications of it are, but my lady friend, who subsequently got arrested, was arrested within a week or so from the time that she parked in this parking place that there's nothing wrong with parking in. And, but he testified that he had taken her license number at the time and run it through the DMV to find out who she was. And he speaks of this as if it is just any time he wants to, he can do that. And if that's true, that's pretty scary. So I'm going to be checking with the Department of Motor Vehicles this week and find out what sort of probable cause or reasonable suspicion or whatever these guys are supposed to have, or if any peace officer at any time could just pick up, you know, somebody's license number and want to know who they are and all about them, and they just call the license number in.
So the outcome of that particular harassment against this woman who was a friend of yours was that they kind of tracked her down, pulled her over, hauled her off to jail, and...
They found my pepper spray in her glove compartment, and they charged her with buying, using, and being in possession. And, of course, she was none of the above. And then, of course, resisting arrest. But they were extremely hostile and physical in the way they addressed, you know, dealt with her. And the only physical resistance that she offered, although she was entitled to do a great deal more, had to do with what it took for her to maintain her balance as she got out of the vehicle. So, it, you know, it's just, it's the same old 148 stuff, you know. Cop comes up, says, give me head, you don't give him head, you're 148. You know, just like...
148, of course, is resisting arrest?
Failure to follow the orders of a peace officer. It's so broad, man, nobody can really pin it down. That little girl in the roadblock is still being tried.
You're talking about the smog check?
Yeah, 148.
This is a woman last fall who stopped to look at a smog check at, what, in the Aptos area?
Yeah.
And because the Highway Patrol didn't like her doing that, they not only started verbally harassing her, but actually physically harassing her?
Yeah, grabbed her, threw her down on the ground, cuffed her up, hauled her off to jail, charged her with not following the lawful order of a peace officer. Of course, we've since discovered that the roadblock was unlawful. The district attorney doesn't want to deal with that, but they're going to have to. They did it under 2814 of the vehicle code. 2814 of the vehicle code specifically states that that these roadblocks have got to be for the CHP to run inspections, and the CHP was not running this inspection. It was the Bureau of Automotive Repair and the Air Resources Board. So the whole thing is just trumped up bogus. But they're pursuing her. We got to assume because she's a friend of mine. And, of course, Laurie, the same thing. And then, of course, a friend of mine was arrested in one location for trespassing in the building next door because they thought he was me. That one just came down about a month, the day before Memorial Day. So that one's out there, and that's another one of my circle of friends that's been, you know, prosecuted for bull.
Has anybody copped a plea on these charges?
Nobody copped a plea in my group of friends. Man, that's one of the problems. There's nobody prepared to say that they did something they didn't do just so they won't have to, you know, suffer the slings and arrows of these guys.
That's right.
Yeah, I'm going to be doing direct examination on this, too, man. It's going to be kind of interesting. Kelly was, we got into a little bit of a contest at the end of the thing today, and I have to refer to Devereaux as a thief and a liar, and he decided to take exception to that, and he wanted to copy the transcript and blah, blah, blah. And, of course, I told the judge he didn't need to do that I'd go ahead and I will fill out a sworn affidavit that I believe the man to be a thief and a liar. I'll sign it, certify it, and serve it on him. He wants to sue me for my beliefs that he's a thief and a liar. You know, the defense of slander is the truth, and I believe I can show that he does both.
You want to make any comments on thievery and misstatements by him?
Well, the theft in general, of course, when you steal a valuable truth, that's a lie. So the stealing and lying is all lumped into one. But when you get that actual physical property, I have solid, confirmed reports of at least a dozen or more skateboards that have been taken by him for one reason or another from these young people, usually minors. It's amazing, you know, his invisible friends that give him all this information. What he'll do with these young people is he'll steal their skateboard, and then he'll hold that skateboard and won't give it back to them unless they snitch out one of these other kids outside, you know. And if they make up some story about their buddies, then they get their skateboard back. Otherwise, they never see it again. Now, I don't, you know, if they want to play it under color of law, therefore it's not stealing, they're welcome to split that hair if they want to, but I stand by my original position, and he's a thief and a liar. I know he's a liar. I sat there in court today and listened to him.
What did he say that was not the truth?
Oh, Jesus, man. His testimony is just filled with it. It's kind of interesting. Part of it had to do with how he approached my vehicle the day he arrested me. He's claiming that he walked up to the thing, and I was sitting in the driver's seat when he walked up to the vehicle. And, of course, that's absolutely not true. I was out of the vehicle walking into a store when he accosted me. So it's like, pardon me, son, you know? I mean, it's a lie. I mean, it's all through his stuff. And it's weird because he tells enough of the truth in places where it doesn't seem like, you know, he could ever get caught for lying. The lies, he mixes it. And it's really bizarre trying to sit there and question the guy because, you know what the truth is, and he's using enough of it to make it confusing enough that you really can't get, you know, to anything.
The reason that he said that you were in the vehicle because that would be the only justification for questioning and stopping you?
I think that there's something in there. I don't know exactly what it is, but it's my belief. Like he said, his rear yellow light was on. he admits that his red lights weren't on, but he says his rear yellow light, his flashing light, was on. And that's also untrue. I mean, literally what happened was I pulled into this parking place, got on my truck, and started to walk into the store. He pulled into the space beside me. He says he was all cattywampus in there. The fact is he was parked there just like a normal person. I'm getting ready to enter the store, and he's out of his car, and he says, you know, I need to see your driver's license and registration. And it's like, well, what for? And he said, well, you're doing 25 and a 35, and I heard you don't have a driver's license. I looked at him, I said, well, even if it was doing 35 or 25, what business is it of yours? And then he asked for my license again, and I pushed out MI under arrest stuff until he finally said I was. He says I refused to show him my license to be taken to a magistrate. You don't have to talk to those guys alongside the road, you know? I mean, even if you're, once you're under arrest, you got a right to remain silent. And there's so many fools in this county that won't do that. 90% of all the convictions in those courts come from admissions and confessions. When you're dealing with a cop, man, shut up. Don't say nothing. Don't say nothing. You know, so it's like he's sitting there saying that I refused all this stuff. I didn't refuse nothing. I never refused nothing. My training is real clear. I mean, I blew one a little bit here on my seatbelt rest a while back, but that won't happen again. I let that gal slip up on me, and I did not actually get her to commit that I was under arrest before I was cuffed up and in the car. But that's another story for another day in another court.
So any further description of what happened this afternoon in court?
No, my basic feeling about it is that I got a little bit, got a little passionate toward the end because I started telling them I really needed to drive my damn, I needed to get on my motorcycle. I needed to do some riding. I needed to get in town. I mean, this stuff about not being able to use the roadways is killing me. And it's like, my life is just turned upside down by it. And I tried to explain to him that it's a matter of money. They can't show where I ever bothered anybody by using the roadways, you know? And I know that my legal position's down. He won't read the briefs. He will not acknowledge the body of law that protects that right. Now, why that is, I don't know. But we're going to stay on him till he does. I mean, I think the guy, although I know your feelings for him are a little different. In fact, he commented on that early on. I asked him what kind of court he had. He said that you called it, Robert Norris says it's a kangaroo court, but it's a municipal court. You know, he's just kidding. I mean, the guy's got a good sense of humor, and I think he's an honorable gentleman. But I also think he's lost. I don't think he can go where he wants to go. I think his job just absolutely has made him a part of a very corrupt system.
I'm afraid you're...
That was Richard Quigley, and you were listening to a conversation in mid-July with Mr. Quigley regarding his harassment and the harassment of his friends by a sheriff's sergeant in the Santa Cruz County Sheriff's Department, Sergeant Devereaux. Quigley continues to pursue redress for these cases, though first he and his friends who are charged with numerous offenses have to deal with those problems. This is Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. Back from the grave. Back from the grave because last week I promised myself and told you listeners that last week's show was going to be the last show in this series, possibly with the exception of certain special shows for breaking news events that I'm lucky enough to have lots of information about. But here it is, August 10th, 1997, and since I haven't gotten out the revitalized Street Shit Sheet, a homeless newsletter that I was publishing, I began publishing it in 1988 and continue publishing it. The last issue came out, I believe, in February of this year, possibly November or December of last year, 1996. Since that issue is not published, I feel obliged to present this show instead, but I do indeed think this will be the last show, and I encourage folks to stay alert for the Street Shit Sheet, which should be hitting the streets and available on the streets, and also available through HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, the organization that I've been working with for the last decade or so. Street Shit Sheet is every bit as interesting as Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. It's easier to get through in a shorter period of time, and it hopefully will get to more people. Unfortunately, even though you are listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, for Radio Santa Cruz is constricted and contracted somewhat in the last 6 to 9 months. In spite of the devoted work of a few free radio people, the collective is kind of withered, and really it's become sort of a small group of folks running their own station. And this has kind of left the rest of us who want access to a transmitter and the ability to do call-ins and some kind of regular studio work like we were doing before, sort of out in the cold. Not necessarily because of favoritism by the part of those who have access to the transmitter, but because of the problems of having a transmitter that is accessible to everybody, a house where a transmitter can be used and where everybody can have access to it who is a member of the collective, that problem has not been overcome. As I've said every week when I've done this show on free radio, the Santa Cruz Free Radio is in fact homeless. It needs a home, and so far, and until it gets one, it's probably going to be pretty much a shadow of its former self. Anyway, this is going to be a shorter show than usual. It should last about an hour and a half. We're going to have interviews with Cornerstone Carol Denny of Berkeley, a Berkeley activist who is continuing to fight for the rights of poor people up there, specifically those who are on the streets. The problems actually are very similar to those in Santa Cruz. The kinds of hypocrisies, compromises, and repressive laws similar to those that we have here in Santa Cruz, although there have been some improvements that we here in Santa Cruz have not yet seen. The Proposition O, the panhandling law, was somewhat dismantled, although as you'll hear from Cornerstone Carol in this upcoming interview, she still takes to task harshly the city council, which, even though it really does have a real progressive majority, as distinguished from the pseudo-progressive majority which the Santa Cruz City Council has not yet taken the steps it needs to revitalize the police review board, to assure low-income housing, let's say, for instance, in the Telegraph Avenue Berkeley Inn area, to insist on fair treatment of the homeless in places like People's Park, and indeed throughout the city. She has an interesting critique, which I encourage you to listen to. Carol is a singer, an often controversial activist, and a well-spoken, hard-working individual who's out there in the fray. We're also going to be replaying some of the controversy that happened in front of Cat and Canary, the, I guess you might say, upscale dress boutique that's at the corner of Cathcart and Pacific, right across from Friendship Corner or Hippie Corner. Cat and Canary has taken a lot of flack from me in the past. It was a part of the official boycott that Revolutionary Coalition, the Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, HUF, and elements of the Coalition to Decriminalize Poverty announced in 1994 in, I guess it was May, when it became clear that certain stores, Bookshop Santa Cruz, Artisans, the ID Building, Atlantis Fantasy World, Game-A-Lot, Staff of Life, there may have been one or two others, but those are the ones that come to mind, were active and instrumental in pushing the anti-homeless downtown ordinances, which made peaceful spare changing after dark a crime, and actually a jailable crime if two such cases were found within 6 months, made it illegal, most notoriously, to sit on the sidewalk anywhere in Santa Cruz, a law that's been modified because of mass protest and because of court action, but is still in effect, in fact, most of its provisions. Anyway, series of these anti-homeless laws. Cat and Canary has also been held responsible by some, for instance, for encouraging the city to remove the benches in front of its business so as to discourage congregating by, quote, the wrong sort of people, though others have held the El Centro residents. Their legitimate concern with noise at night responsible for this. Again, the wrong solution, even if that was the concern. Cat and Canary has also been indicted for going after people across the street, encouraging the police to harass people for sitting across the street. Linda Edwards, Linda the Lark, as I used to call her, Santa Cruz activist who fought until the closing months of her life against the Santa Cruz City sleeping ban, suffered an arrest in 1994 because of Cat and Canary. There's been controversy around the store. I came on the scene about 2 weeks ago and interviewed Ricky Prim, and you're going to hear him, some of that interview, and then you're going to hear me interviewing Cat and Canary co-owners, and I believe Kathleen and Julie are the co-owners of Cat and Canary. Julie I spoke to but didn't actually record. Kathleen, I got more, I hope it's Kathleen, maybe it's Catherine, my apologies if I have the name wrong. I did give a fuller interview. And the actual outcome of the situation is not clear. The controversy concerned, as you're going to hear, a black man who went into Cat and Canary to return an item purchased there by another individual who was held in the back by his account. I both agree to this. Then he was released, went across the street. They decided to arrest him, came after him, held him. Finally, they released him again, and then his friend came down, the one who actually had bought the item. Then they arrested him, and eventually he had a medical emergency. He was taken off to Dominican Hospital in the midst of all this, the second person who came down. You're going to hear this discussion, somewhat heated at times, and two sides discussing this. Anyway, Ricky launched a week-long protest in front of Cat and Canary with picket signs. And it was at last discussion seeking to get damages from Cat and Canary ranging up to $10,000 for the false arrest, which may sound like a lot of money, but I'm not aware that, I think if you have a real false arrest court case, it may not be a lot of money. My expertise in this is limited. And I have not been able to get back to Rick with any, well, I spoke to him a couple days ago, and he was still talking to his lawyer, he told me, about how to proceed. He said that they had filed a court case. I haven't checked the courts to see if this is true, and I have not yet gotten back to Cat and Canary's owners. But these are tapes that give you a discussion of the issues of several weeks ago, and they're, in a certain sense, more historical documents than breaking news. But for those of you who would like to kind of investigate the issue by hearing at least two sides at a certain point in this dialogue, that you will get to do. In fact, why don't we go to that right now? This is Cat and Canary. Several weeks ago, the issue of was racial discrimination involved in the actions of a Cat and Canary employee in detaining and arresting two individuals, apparently improperly arresting them. Cat and Canary later apologized. Let's hear this debate. Cat and Canary here on Pacific Avenue on July 23rd. Noon. Howdy. A couple of signs out here. God don't like ugly, and this store is ugly towards black people. Cat and Canary. Thank you. God bless.
But yeah, I ain't coming back to this store.
Hey.
How you doing,
Robert,
brother?
This is Mr. Prim.
Yeah. Mr. Prim.
Yeah.
And what's your full name, Mr. Prim?
Ricky Prim.
And Ricky, you got a sign that says Cat and Canary is very racist against black people.
Yeah.
Made a purchase and I wanted a refund. Instead of a refund, they sent me to jail. Tell me about that.
All right. Well, the purchase, right, really, for me, it was for my friend, right? I only just merely went and traded in. They do a lot of business at Cat and Canary over in Los Gatos, right? Uh-huh. So come buying out, me and them was had an agreement. They was going to apologize to me in the newspaper and all this because the guy came and admitted to the police that was his stuff. So, and they carried me all the way to the jailhouse. He come over there real fast, and he admitted that it was stuff, so they arrested him, blah, blah, and all that, and get to the fact that when they came back, they admit that they was dead wrong. The girl made a mistake in Aaron, but she aborted the shirt out, but somehow the shirt still got out the stove. So they wanted to apologize to me, which they apologized to them first in their house. I stayed out here 3 days protesting, so they didn't want me in the front of their store. A husband come to me crying, I mean with tears in his eyes, and then yesterday we had a meeting. We was going to come to an agreement. We thought we came to an agreement.
Now, we is who?
Cat and Canary. The owners of Cat and Canary. Right. We sit down in the back of Cat and Canary,
right,
come to an agreement.
Right.
They say, okay. So they say, well, we won't compensate this in the newspaper. I say, well, between 5 and 10, that should be enough for a man who almost had a heart attack and you stopped his whole life in a couple of days, and you say, yeah, we want to hurry up and get rid of this. Say, okay, blah,
so
blah.
$5,000 and $10,000
for my compensation for my mental stress.
Right.
So this morning, when I called them for it, they said, talk to our lawyer. We don't need to talk to you no more. We ain't sorry. So I said, well, I got the paper saying you accepted in the newspaper, like you taping it now. A guy was recording it. So I called, I'm going to call the newspaper and tell them disregard that. So now we have to go through court with this and find out who really is in the wrong.
So you say that yesterday they acknowledged responsibility
for
making it.
I got the paper.
Mistake.
She reading it.
Right.
You're reading it.
It says, it is unfortunate this incident occurred. We apologize on behalf of Cat and Canary for any inconvenience or hardship you have experienced, like a heart attack or two arrests.
Yeah.
We pride ourselves on our amicable relationship with the community, of course not the people across the street, along with our commitment to providing quality customer service. You got some customer service didn't you?
I got a lot of customer service.
And regret this incident occurred. Signed, Julie Hendy.
July 22nd letter to Ricky Prynne at 722 Windsor Street regarding the incident of July 16th.
No, it's 160 Park Place. They got the wrong address, too.
They have the wrong address.
I admitted that.
This letter relates to the incident of July 16th, 1997, wherein you visited our store to return some shirts. Because the SKU number of one of the shirts was not included on the receipt you presented, our employee believed the shirt was stolen, and pursuant to long-standing store policy, notified the police. Apparently, the shirt was not stolen, but rather there was a mix-up when it was purchased. We have since notified both the police department and the district attorney's office of the apparent mistake. We know you feel you were treated harshly and unfairly. We have spoken to the employee involved, and she assures us it was not her intent to belittle or upset you, but merely to get to the bottom of the situation. It is unfortunate this incident occurred. We apologize on behalf of Cat and Canary for any inconvenience or hardship you have experienced. We pride ourselves on our amicable relationship with the community, along with our commitment to providing quality customer service, and regret this incident occurred. Signed, Julie Hemdy and Kathleen McBurney.
Without a lawyer. See, they manipulated me for my education without a lawyer. See, well, we give it this apology.
So you're upset with what you consider were that it was a racist policy or an attitude by perhaps the employees or even the store owner.
Yeah.
And
they saying they weren't racist, but in the back, they was all nice and crying. So this morning is a whole different story. So they say, go talk to their lawyer. So why would we go in the back and have a meeting and you apologize to me in the signal, but I got to talk to your lawyer? Why is the lawyer? We try to get the lawyers out of it. That's why we had a conversation in the back. So now I have to stay out here until my lawyer filed it in court.
Did the Sentinel reporter was present when this?
Yeah, he was present and taping it.
And did it appear in the Sentinel? I guess not.
Not yet.
Right, they're keeping it pretty close.
Because I think they didn't want to admit the other guy named Chuck Hill name in it. They're trying to keep him out because he's a big-time customer. They made a mistake with a big customer in Los Gatos.
What happened with that?
That's the guy who purchased the shirt. No, they don't want to admit their name under no circumstance.
What's the name of the fellow who purchased the shirt?
Chuck Hill.
H-I-L-L?
Yeah.
And what happened was, as I understand it, you went in to return some shirts for him on July 17th.
Right.
They detained you, and then
They let me go. They said, the police said, we're going to let him go because you don't have all, the right evidence. And they was laughing on the outside. I was locked up in a room, and I thought they was humiliating me by laughing. They was laughing at me because they looked at me, and all of them bust out and started laughing because I told them I was going to sue them for false arrest if you arrest me. And they did it anyway. So in the bottom line is, I don't know what's really in their mind, but I just got to do what I got to do.
So after you were held in that room,
After I was held in the room, I asked the police, what are you going to arrest me for? Uh-huh. He said, well, we're going to let you go when my sergeant get in. We got to get this straight. The sergeant comes. She explained something to him. So he sent the police in there and let me out. He escorted me out the store. Got all the way across the street. So the sergeant lady called me back and said, Mr. Prynne, the lady in the store wants you arrested for stealing.
Right.
And that was the bottom line. The bottom line, they arrested me for stealing.
So were you taken to jail or given a citation?
I was taken all the way to the door of the jail, and that's when the guy who repurchased the shirt came and told the same story I told the police.
What was his name?
Chuck Hill. He told the same story that I told the police, and they arrested him for receiving stolen goods.
And then what happened?
And he went inside, and they had a heart attack, and they let me go, and I ran across the street like Michael Johnson, and I was out of stress. I got out from by the police station. I was trying to get away from Random because I know they was wrong.
So you were then arrested again?
No, I never did. They arrested me here. Right. They took me all the way to the jailhouse, right, and to the door, and that's when he come up and admitted, and the police asked him the story that I told the police, and the story was the same story. So they had to let me go, and they turned around and arrested him.
Now, how's he doing? He was taken to Dominican Hospital.
Well, he's pretty good. He's all right at the moment in time, but I ain't seen him in a few days since this happened.
What kind of contacts have you had with the owners of Cat Canary since then?
Well, nothing. They come out here this morning and started hollering and fussing at me and told me they were going to call the police for standing up in the front of their store. I told them, call the police, and when the police come, I let them read this letter. He said, you're doing the First Amendment. He said, you're just voicing your rights. He said, I can't do nothing about that because you pay taxes. He said, but if they come back out the store again, I would arrest them for harassing you. And he said,
it's a federal crime to harass someone.
And they did. The owner and the lady just come out there and harass me.
Now, who are we talking about? Are we talking about a manager person or an
owner?
And what is the name of that woman who harassed
It's Julie
Hendy?
Yeah.
Julie Hendy?
Yeah.
Is she in there now?
She's in there right now. Both of COVID. It's in there right now. And they sent one of their employees out here to harass me. And because she's a person of color like me, so they feel, though, if they sent her to harass me, telling this ain't right, I would just go on by my business.
What's the name of the employee?
I don't even know the employee. I just know she's just one like me inside of the store.
And what did she and Julie Hendy tell you?
Told me to get from in the front of their store before she called the police, saying, you know that ain't right.
And did you suggest to her
that... I just told her to go talk to my lawyer, talk to the lawyer.
Who's
that
your lawyer?
I ain't got it yet. I'm just telling her to go.
Who's her lawyer, do you know?
I don't know her lawyer. See, we don't know if she's playing the game or not, but I will have one before the day is over. See what I'm saying? And I know if someone out there would rather like to take this, especially after she apologized and I got the letter in my back pocket saying they was wrong. You know, we try to...
I hope you have another copy of that letter.
Oh, I got two. My friend got one. Good. You want a copy?
Yeah.
I can go get you a copy down the street if you want to.
Okay, I'll hold your sign for you.
Well, I'm going to go.
All right, again, to
Ricky Brim.
And Ricky, you're here. It's about, 12:15 or 12:30 in front of Cat and Canary, again, holding up a sign encouraging people to be aware of this incident that happened on July 17th here, which the management has admitted to, apparently, in this document you've given us. They've signed it. I was told that all you wanted was an apology and not financial damages. Is that
not
true?
No, I didn't ever tell. I told them they should apologize to me like they apologized to the white guy. That's what I told them. And
right.
Then when we got back in there, I said I was so stressed out and all that. I said, you should compensate me for my time and my emotional stress and all of that. And that's when she said, of course. The lady said, of course.
Julie Hendy said that?
Yeah, she said, of course. She said, but I don't want to put it in the newspaper or nothing. She said, we'll talk behind closed doors. I said, that's why we behind closed doors.
This guy's running for president, let me tell you.
I said, she behind closed doors. That's why I said, well, we behind closed doors, it won't get to the press. I said, the press is out there waiting on me and you to finish this in. So we agreed to that.
When was this?
Yesterday. Okay. I said, we agreed to between five and ten was for my for
you
all
agreed to a specific figure?
No, we didn't. I said, between, they said they couldn't pay $20,000.
Right.
I said, I didn't ask you for no $20,000.
Right.
I said, between five and ten.
Okay.
And that's why all it is. I said, now I'm going to give you the privilege to think how much you should give me. And I'm going to let you do it, I said, because I was going to ask you for $25,000. That's the bottom line. I said, but Vince, I'm a child of God. I said, I'm going to give you and your co-owner a chance to handle this between 5 and 10. And that's going to, when you sign and write up the paper that you said you're going to write up, and I sign it, would there be no more action taken against you and no code of law. They say, we agree.
Okay. Now, this paper, you notice, mentions nothing about a financial settlement.
Well, that's how they tried to get by. But they got another paper they had written up to me to sign,
right,
saying for that was an apology paper.
Right.
But they had another paper that they had supposed to written up and sign.
Right.
But see, all of a sudden they saying this and that. Now this morning it's a different thing because they feel though this paper was accepted. But then, like they said,
what was this other paper? What did it say?
They never showed it.
And how do you know it existed?
Because they told me.
And what did they say about it?
They said, we got another paper for you to sign so it won't be no illegal doctrine after we get through with this. We're just not going to put what we're giving to you in the press.
That's right.
See, the press, they didn't want the press to know how much they was compensating me.
Did they give you an indication of why they retracted their offer?
No. They just called them. They told me to call them at 10 o'clock in the morning, and it'll be all selling. They had the papers written up and everything. I called at 10 o'clock in the morning. They hung up the phone in my face.
They did?
Yeah. Hung up in the phone, says in my lawyer hand, and hung the phone up. So when I approached
who hung up on you?
One of the owners.
You know which one?
No, I have not. I just said, let me speak to the owner. because that's what they say Carl is, Julie and Hector, whatever name.
Right on, guys.
Kathleen.
And so the bottom line is they bagged up off their apology because they didn't have the right paper. They thought it was going to go through the newspaper, and they could say, well, we got it. He didn't sign the paper. They don't want nobody else know. See what I'm saying? But my friend was sitting at the door. He went all the way gone. See, he got up and said, it's between you and Ricky about the money for it. I'm getting out of here. His name Tony. He said, I'm getting out of here. I'm out of it now. Y'all sell the money for it, and I'll be back, and we'll go get the press. She said, fine, Mr. Tony. We would do that. And I told him, I said, ma'am, I ain't got no lawyer. You ain't asking for... Well, somebody filed a class action lawsuit. I said, it wasn't me. I said, I ain't even got a lawyer.
And somebody filed a class action lawsuit?
I don't know. I think she was just pulling the wool over my head because of my education. See what I'm saying? She know that I ain't got no college education. She know that I don't know that much about the law. But what she didn't know, that I got willpower in God to believe that my right is right. And I ain't going to look back.
How much support have you gotten from the local Santa Cruz community?
A lot.
And how has that support manifested?
It helped me out. We thought it was all over. They was going to come all out here and help me through this thing. But I told them. I said, in God's name, I agree with the people to tear up my sign in the front of her husband Saturday, that we would talk about it Tuesday and come to an agreement on everything, even the finance with the husband. He said, of course. I went outside, got the sign, tore him up in his face and put him in his trash, showing my apartment that we can talk like human. I can talk as being a customer, and you can talk as being the owner of the store, and we can resolve all this mess. But to resolve, they vice versa, they played on me again, they tricked me on my knowledge, they thought it was all good to two-shoe because of what they apologized. But then they never tell the public about the finance that they was going to offer me.
So in other words, they offered you a financial settlement, and
they
didn't
offer me, but they said they couldn't pay no $20,000. I just say, well, you don't have to give me number between 5 and 10. I know what paper you
and
want
they
me.
To do that.
They agreed.
They verbally agreed to
pay me between 5 and 10. The two owners, me and the two owners was in
there. And then they retracted that settlement
retracted
this morning and hung up on you.
They thought it wasn't nobody in there with a witness but me, but my friend, you know those, because if I heard what they was laughing at me about, you can hear between they those. He said, I heard what you told them between 5 and 10. And he said, but I kept on going. He said, they said, okay, we'll figure out a number.
So what do you intend to do now?
I'm intending to take them to law and to court and then find out why they lied to me and why they tried to misuse me and humiliate me.
And will you be continuing this protest?
Until it's all over. Until the last
people
end.
People can help you? Do you want them to give you a call?
Anybody can help me. It's just not on. I'm not out here. I'm not here. This is my feeling, how they treated me as being a black man. That's why I'm calling them racist. They not only treated me bad, they treated white guys bad. They treated other peoples of color bad. I done talked to them out here. And I told them the same thing I tell you. You should get a sign and say what they did to you and not tell me. I'm telling you what they did to me.
What kind of reports have you received about
that? All kinds. I received that you can't even take back something if it's told from them. And you have to call the head company to get your refund back from them still because they won't pay you because they think you took it. And it was told out the store. I done had guys to tell me how they've been arrested for bringing back pay things with receipt. Even the cable man told me yesterday how he had been arrested. See what I'm saying? So, Kevin Canary's the bottom line. They is playing game with the public of Santa Cruz and need to be off the mall. They need to shut this store down. If they can't think like customers, act like customers, they don't need to take our money. They need to get off the mall and go to Wyoming somewhere and get way up in the woods and be cat and canary. That's the bottom line, so they can have their fun out
there in
the
woods. Have you heard anyone else who's actually had a problem with Cat and Canary?
Oh, lots of guys. They come up here, and when we first start protesting, they come up here and voice their opinions about Cat and Canary, about how Cat and Canary treated them bad. And there was another black guy said he went in the store. Cat and Canary didn't want him in the store because he got dreadlocked. He looking like a troll. See what I'm saying? He's trying to humiliate him because he talked to the guy across the street. And the bottom line, Cat and Canary need to be off of Santa Cruz downtown, period. If they're going to play a game, if they're going to apologize to me, then go back on their apology in less than 24 hours, something wrong with that store owner.
You want to pray together with the owner?
We pray together with the owner of Cat and Canary, say we will resolve this and before in God's name. We prayed to God and said we will resolve this today.
One way of resolving it is hanging up on you.
Hanging up on
call the attorney.
And call the attorney.
That's one way of resolving it.
Yeah, the bottom line, they'd
say.
But
police have told you that after they threatened to call police on you again, the police came out and said you have a perfect right to be picketed.
Police say that's my first. I got the First Amendment, the right to be picketed.
Did they tell you not to be near the store?
They told me don't stand 6 feet in the front of that store and don't block nobody trying to go in there. I say I didn't. I say, they come out and arrest me.
It's quite legal to stand 6 feet in front of the store. You just can't sit.
Sit 6 feet in the front of the store. That's what I mean, sit. Right. Yeah, so he just told me, long as they anybody in that store say anything else to me, call him and they would arrest him. Cause they ain't
which,
got no,
which officer told you that? Know his name?
No, he just one was passing by, say he got a call. I guess he must have got a call. So he was the first one to turn the corner when he got the call. And then he stopped and asked me. And when he read that paper, he said, well, look like somebody else. It looked like they in the room.
Thank you very much.
Okay, you have a nice day, sir, and thank you.
All right.
I then went inside Cat and Canary to get their side of the story.
How you doing? I'm with Free Radio, and having gone through the thing outside, it's only fair to give you a chance to respond, and I'd be happy to do that if you feel like it.
And under the advice of our attorneys, we, because there is possible legal action, we're really limited in what we can say. Mm-hmm. All I can say is it's not entirely true what Ricky Prim is saying out on the street. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, we can't do much about it because you and I both know about free speech.
Indeed.
And it's, you know, it's very powerful.
It's a difficult burden for people at times.
Yes, yes, it is. Yes, I will fully agree with that. So it's, you know, there's been harm done to more parties than just Ricky and, you know, Cat and Canary. And I really, we're going to be talking to our attorney at 2 o'clock today.
Who is your attorney?
It's a good question.
We're not sure yet.
He's not sure if he's an attorney either. Right,
so.
Right. We've actually talked to several different attorneys. For left several issues. And we did issue Ricky a public apology, and now he wants much more than a public apology.
Is this what you mean, this statement he's giving out, this signed statement?
Right.
It is an apology. So in other words, his statement that you came to some understanding about some range of financial remuneration.
No, we never did that.
That never?
Never occurred. It was never even in the discussion on Saturday. It did enter into a discussion yesterday.
Uh-huh. But there was no commitment made at that time?
Oh, no, not at all. None. We agreed to meet publicly Tuesday at 11 o'clock to issue a public apology.
Right.
And the agenda, all I can say is the agenda changed from Saturday to Tuesday.
In other words, the demands went up in some sense.
Much, much.
Financially,
much
we're talking?
Yes, much. No.
Well, I wish I could make some demands.
I know, so do I. Like I say, I mean, I think injury's been done unintentionally to both parties. And we'd love to have it resolved. There's no doubt about it.
Is there any sense in which are you willing to do some sort of mediation?
We did that with the mediator that Tony, mm-hmm. I mean that Ricky knew, Tony. Uh-huh. He is associated
Tony
with
Tony Hill?
No, Tony, he's associated with the Progressive Baptist Church. He's been the spokesperson for Ricky. We did go through a meeting, which we, at time and place that Ricky requested.
Mm-hmm. And did the meeting come out a certain way and then later it changed, or was there a problem at the meeting itself?
No, it changed after the meeting.
So you came to an understanding at the meeting?
Yes, that it was not most racially motivated. Mm-hmm. He could see, you know, that we were good people, you know, judgments were made on his part about us, which, you know, he found out that we were untrue, and that he really, you know, wanted, he felt that he has taken it to the public, and that he wanted a public apology, which we were willing to give.
So that you agreed to that, but then because of financial demands later, that agreement is sort of over, or is that the...
Well, he still has a public apology.
But not before the media at this point.
Oh, no, he had it.
Oh,
like
he had
it. Oh, yeah. Oh, no,
happened.
He had exactly what he wanted.
So the Sentinel came out.
Yes, yes.
This happened yesterday? Or?
This happened yesterday. And now when I walked out there to talk to him to say, Ricky, your sign's not true.
Right.
It's not true. I mean, he didn't purchase the shirts, one.
Right.
he just, you know, it says I have to stay away from him, stay away from me. And I go, Ricky, really, this isn't the truth, and this is not, you know, you got the apology that you wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, you know, no, it's, you know, I disrespect everything you're saying now. Stay away from me. I don't, you know, it's going to a higher level.
What he told us was that he had called earlier this morning and that you had hung up on him or someone.
Oh, no, I haven't. No, he goes, hi, Tony.
Right.
And I go, he goes, hi. And I go, hi, Ricky, this is Kathleen.
Right.
And I said we were unable to meet his demands, you know, at this time.
And
he said, have a nice day, and hung up.
So you didn't hang up on him?
No, no, no.
You had a conversation that was
right.
polite?
Yeah, no, no, he's very polite on the phone.
This was this morning?
This was this morning, probably around, I want to say, 10 o'clock in the morning.
And had he changed his demands from the previous time you've been discussing? Did they become higher or firmer or different?
You know, different. I don't know, really.
Yeah.
I mean, if
you're not sure
we
how
can,
much.
I just, because of pending lawsuits, it's really, really hard, and we are going to have a public statement, which I hope we're able to just put in the window.
Right.
So
well, Beat It had a similar problem.
Right, exactly.
You talk to them?
Yes. And they just.
What was the resolution of that situation,
Beat It? I don't know. I really don't have any idea. So I never, you know, when it was happening, I just, you know, we all are down here in business together, but I don't really know the owners of the store or the manager. So I think there was a resolution, but that's all I know.
On a completely different subject.
Okay.
The benches have disappeared from in front of your store. The
yes.
benches that were once there. Was that due to concerns you had about people hanging out, bothering the customers and so forth? Or?
Not bothering the customers. I mean, I think there's been concern over the park benches since they were put in place.
And what would that concern have been?
I just can't go there. I'm sorry, Robert. I'm emotionally just spent over this whole thing. It's been going on for a week, and it's been really hard. So
I'm just wondering because Jim told us that Jim Lang told us that one thing, and we heard other things. Hanging out, bothering the customers, and so forth.
Not bothering the customers. I mean, I think there's been concern over the park benches since they were put in place.
And what would that concern have been?
I just can't go there. I'm sorry, Robert. I'm emotionally just spent over this whole thing. It's been going on for a week, and it's been really hard. So
I'm just wondering because Jim told us that Jim Lang told us that one thing, and we heard other things from El Centro residents. Did you request the benches be removed?
No.
Okay, then I will clarify that because we had the understanding that may have been involved, but it wasn't.
There was a lot of conversation around the benches in several meetings that went on. It's possible that I had said I wish the benches would go away because I have, I mean, it's been problematic.
But you didn't call the Parks and Rec and say, take those benches away.
No, I didn't personally do that.
Right.
No.
And you don't think Julie did either?
I don't think so.
Is there anything that you would like to say to Free Radio Santa Cruz from your perspective on this issue that you'd like them to know, you'd like the audience to know?
Well, we'll have, you know, more of a statement, of course, and that, you know, one of the, I've learned a lot in a very short period of time, and that, you know, really harm has been brought to both parties, and I have really found out how easily it is to place labels on people. You know, we're being labeled as racist, you know, Ricky was accused of having stolen property, and that those labels are very harmful, and I take that away from this experience. And it's been enlightening and humbling. It's been one of the harder lessons of 20 years, you know, being in business here. This does not happen very often, ever. So.
This hasn't happened to you before?
Never. No accusations of any type.
We've been talking to Kathleen McBurney here at Cat and Canary, and I want to thank you for sharing your thoughts with us.
Okay, you're welcome.
You're, of course, listening to Bathrooms, Beers, Broadsides on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. This is the Sunday, August 10th, 1997 edition of Bathrooms, Beers, Broadsides. The last one, I hope, since I feel that it'd be better to get this information out to you in written form. But not having done that yet, I feel obliged to continue the show, and I hope you're enjoying it. If you have any comments, if you have any additions, if you have any corrections, if anyone listening from Cat and Canary or Ricky Prim wishes to call in with an update on this, please do call 423-4833. That's 423-HUFF. That's my phone number. And if I don't have another show, I will pass on that tape and your response to Free Radio Santa Cruz for them to broadcast independently. We're going to hear a bit more of this debate and more from Ricky Prim. First, a few comments from me. I don't really have a lot of information to add to the situation of Cat and Canary, but interestingly enough, other things are happening around that area, which I think are of interest to homeless rights people concerned with the civil rights of poor people. There is only one store left in the food court, which is just down the way from Captain Canary. It used to have a number of small restaurants. Now it only has one, sort of a vegetarian Asian place, not entirely vegetarian, good vegetarian food, good meat food. And apparently the entire building officials are trying to throw this guy out. Hope to have an interview with him soon on what's going on with his struggle with the city and the kinds of dirty tactics that are being used to remove him from the area, again, to sort of press on with upscale development of the area. I mentioned last week that up and down Pacific Avenue, you increasingly see parts of the sidewalk privatized, areas where people had previously been sitting removed, benches removed, for instance, from in front of Cat and Canary, a bench removed from in front of the coffee shop near Noah's Bagelry, that's Pete's Coffee, and just again, the general crackdown intensifying in that area. There was some good news last week. Sean Alini won a case in court. He had been harassed by his nemesis, Officer Mark Eboleth, a tall police officer who, with his colleague, Officer Over, were responsible for increasing the ticketing and harassment on the mall considerably. And that, unfortunately, that tradition is continuing on the mall. We've gotten reports of, I guess it was last night or the night before, a sleeping ticket. A woman named Melanie reports she was fell asleep on a bench waiting for someone and was awakened by an officer without warning and given a sleeping ticket. Not clear whether it was before or after 11 o'clock at night. She reports friends being harassed for smoking tobacco, ID checked for their youth. And this is going to become a much more frequent occurrence once the youth curfew goes into effect in early September, having been passed by our liberal-minded city council. For those of you who have suffered police misconduct, I remind you that the Citizens Police Review Board is open from 9 to 1, Mondays through Thursdays, and it is in the phone book under Citizens Police Review Board under Government Pages. It's also, you can walk into the office and file a police complaint there, or you can go to City Hall or to the police station and do the same thing. One method suggested for filing a complaint is to file a very simple written complaint, and such as like a one or two sentence complaint. I complain of excessive force by officer so-and-so. I complain of improper procedure by officer so-and-so. And then append to that a page as an affidavit describing all the details of your complaint. And the reason for separating your complaint in this fashion is to prevent the CPRB or the police department, and the police department is the first agency that reviews this, then it's reviewed by the CPRB if it gets forwarded at all by the police department, which I suppose it should be, although Chief Belcher violated this provision, refusing to forward complaints, which he instead classified as inquiries, a process now ratified by the city council, strangely enough. But there you have it. Anyway, the Internal Affairs Department of the Police will first look over your complaint, then the CPRB, the Citizens Police Review Board, will look it over with a police officer present, thanks to a crazy rule enacted by the CPRB a month or two ago. And finally, it'll go back to the police chief for his own determination as to whether he agrees with the final decision of the Citizens Police Review Board. But the point is that it's much harder for the It's much easier to pick apart a long statement if that is made as the body of your complaint. If you're complaining about 17 things, it's easier for them to dismiss the complaint based on dismissing one statement you make. Whereas if you make simply a simple statement about a complaint, I complain of excessive force, and then you have a long affidavit, they may challenge your affidavit, but they have to deal with the specific of the complaint. It's kind of a technical thing, but maybe useful for those of you who are considering filing a complaint. I also suggest you take a tape recorder with you, particularly if you're making the complaint to a police officer. It's better to make it to a Citizens Police Review Board person, a civilian person, if you can. It's also good to call SPAN, Stop Police Abuse Now, at 475-2012. That's 475-2012. SPAN is run by Nutcracker Nicholas Whitehead. He's actually Nick Whitehead. I call him Nutcracker. It's kind of my pet name for him. He's been pursuing police abuses all around the globe. He comes from South Africa, and he well knows what it is to encounter police abuse. The actual police review board meets once a month on the second Monday of every month, which means it meets tomorrow, August 11th, 5 o'clock. Actually, I think they've moved it to 5:30 now so that more folks who are attending jobs can attend, although I hear nobody's going. You can go if you want, and you can speak during the first half hour during their oral communications period. As I've mentioned before on the show, the oral communications period of the police review board is very liberal compared to city council, so if you want to speak at length, you can. And if you want to file a complaint and make sure it's public, you should write out your complaint, give it to the Citizens Police Review Board, and then take it publicly to this one meeting per month and read it aloud and present it to the board publicly, because otherwise the police department will stamp confidential on it and make it a part of the personnel file of the police officer, and it will not be a public complaint. That is to say, other people who want to find out what's been going on with this particular officer will not have access to this complaint unless they get some kind of court ruling from a judge under a pitches motion. That's what it's called when you get a judicial motion to have the judge review complaints of a police officer. And it happens only in a pending legal case. So you can have the option, if you want, to go to City Hall tomorrow, Monday the 11th of August at 5:30, and speak your piece. Generally, they let you speak 5, 10, even 15 minutes if you have stuff you need to say. The proceedings themselves are rather tedious, but it is an opportunity to present your view. I also want to point out that I don't go to these hearings much anymore, unless, of course, I have a complaint specifically that I wish to make and file in writing, because my own observations and suggestions to the board have been made clearly, both verbally and in writing, and should they be interested in pursuing them, they can. The latest members of the board who gave me some hope that they might signal a change in the board's policies, one woman named Gia Grant is on the board, who seemed to be more receptive than past board members, hasn't gotten back to me, and I invite her or other board members to get in touch with those of us who really do want to combat police abuse. So we actually, it was through our initiative that this board was founded in the first place. But I'm not terribly optimistic at the moment. Let's now hear the rest of that interview with Ricky Prim and Cat and Canary. I should say with Ricky Prim outside Cat and Canary. You can make up your own mind as to what's happened. As I said, the latest is not too much more than what you're hearing now, but you be the judge.
Make one correct.
Yes. Now we're speaking again with Ricky Prim out here. And Ricky, we were told that she did not hang up on you this morning. You had a phone conversation, but she simply said that she was not prepared to give you a settlement at this time.
She didn't say that.
What in fact did she say?
She said, talk to my lawyer, and just hung up the phone. That's all she said. That's why I'm back down. If she would have announced and addressed me like that and would have been proper and made of us understanding, I would have listened to her. I wouldn't be back down here because we already made an agreement inside of a store. You know, to cut this out and not go no further. But when she hung up and said, talk to her lawyer, so what did that mean? That means she apologized to me. She took it back. All of a sudden, in 24 hours, she didn't change her mind. Now she want to tell you she didn't do this because you weren't there. I'm the only one who heard the click.
She also said that she came out here to talk to you. But you refused to talk to her.
That's because she sent her employee out here wrong. And I told her, don't y'all talk to me no more like that. I don't want to hear nothing else y'all got to say. We negotiated with this yesterday.
Did she personally come out to try to talk to you?
Yeah, but she come out here telling me that ain't right on that sign. She didn't come out here and talk to me. She come out here and talk to the sign.
Well, she was upset. She said that the sign says, I made a purchase, when in fact it was your friend.
Well, it's the same. It's just like I made a purchase. I'm the one got arrested. They didn't listen. They assumed that I made the purchase and stole it. So that's why my sign is like this.
You wouldn't want to communicate misinformation.
Well, it's not misinformation. That's why I'm explaining it.
Right.
That's why I told him a friend.
Right.
I told him I wrote this sign fast and out of my mind of stress.
I happen to think that the sign kind of covers it, but
yeah.
It's not as clear as it could be.
Not as clear as it could be. Because I had clear and respectable signs, but I tore them signs up calling it a quit. These is the sign that I first made out of anger when they first did it to me. Right. So I don't have time to make the signs over that I tore up.
Would you still be willing to mediate with the folks inside and come to an understanding?
The bottom line, nope. I tried that. I got my feelings hurt again. I'm hurt right now. All the mental stress that I thought I was getting out of is back on me. So we will have to go to court and have this all announced. They should have did what they supposed to do. They know what they had to do. We was before the paper. They did it and they didn't do it. So let's go to court and find out who's right and who is wrong. That's the bottom line. I tried to be nice as a customer. As a person who's been living in Santa Cruz as a residential, I try to talk to a person who's supposed to be owner and have respect for customers who
now,
spend
she
it.
She said that you did. She did make an apology to the media yesterday publicly. Is that true?
She did.
Yeah.
But she went back on it this morning when she hung up in my face and just said talk to her lawyer. Why? Yesterday, she never said nothing about talk to her lawyer. She said, my lawyer not in it. We don't want no lawyers in it. We don't want to go that far.
So you claim that there's a change in her story between today and yesterday.
It's changing her story. That's a big change. That's a dramatic change. Why would you take me in your back room and your store before witnesses and say all of this in this morning? You changed the conversation in the midair. Hang up in the phone, say, talk to my lawyer. She said, talk to my lawyer.
So if she retracted that statement and told you that...
If she retract that statement and bring back what she said she was going to do, and the closed door while the media went there, and I'm gone by my business. She could close this case out today. It could be closed right now. The same thing she get
even
before.
If she couldn't pay you immediately.
This is what she had to say. She just had to say, give me time. And let's talk about it. She had the right amount. I told her, you think what you should give me. You know what I mean? She said, cool, because I asked for $25,000.
Right.
See what I'm saying? She said, I couldn't afford to pay you that. I said, well, what you think, you and your friend right here, co-owner,
right,
think what y'all can give me between 5 and 10? She said, I agree.
What kind of assurance could you give her that, look at it from her point of view, that...
What kind of assurance could
that you wouldn't change your mind again and just pick up a sign?
Because I would sign the papers right before her eyes, and we would both have documents saying, can nothing else happen after this day? This is all closed. This is a done deal. This is no more even... existed no more. I got a paper saying I can't go no further. She got a paper saying the same thing. It's over. That's what we supposed to be in. She was supposed to wrote the paper up saying, this is what I'm giving Mr.
So you would agree to do this if these papers were presented?
Oh, if they was presentable, she would have did it this morning. It would have been over.
So if she makes that presentation to you...
Between now and today.
Yeah.
Between now, this moment I'm talking to you right now,
yeah,
and now before 4 o'clock, I would assume it, but after 4 o'clock, I have to file it in the court of law.
I see. Now, what exactly do you want her to agree to?
Well, she the one agreed to. I told her I wanted the $25,000. She said she couldn't afford it, so I told her to agree between 5 and 10.
Okay.
So they said they would do it. Then they come up with a story to my talk to their lawyer and hang it up.
Okay.
So I don't know what they agreed. So now the bottom line, bitch, they done did like that, I just take the 10 and go on by my business. See what I'm saying? Now, they making it back in my ball. I tried to be respectful.
I
tried to get them the benefit of the doubt.
Right.
I tried to make it easy on their mind to give me this compensation.
So you're willing to?
I'm willing. And until 4 o'clock this evening.
Okay.
After 4 o'clock, I will file those papers the morning.
If you can find an attorney to do it.
Well, I ain't worried about an attorney. I'm going to L.A.
Okay.
See?
I just spoke to
the public was out here Friday. And the press was out here Friday.
Right.
They didn't come out the store and apologize. They said it was a class action lawsuit against them. That's why they didn't come out here.
So they didn't come out?
No, she didn't come out here. And then sad, her husband called my friend Tony,
yeah,
and asked him would I come to the store for a meeting and so they could apologize to me.
What day was that?
That was Saturday. That was only for me to apologize for me not to protest. And
I'm talking about yesterday, though.
Okay.
Today is
Wednesday.
Today is Wednesday. I'm a little confused here. Okay. So.
Saturday. Okay. When me, she was talking about Saturday, was going to apologize. They agreed to apologize in front of the public in the press. I told them to come out here with a bullhorn and
right,
apologize to me just like you arrested me in the front of the public. You come out here and apologize just like you told the police to arrest me. That's what I want you to do, and I want the person who was laughing at me and the other person I wanted them by. I say, otherwise, I'm going to take action. That's what I told him.
So let me run through this chronology again here. I guess my own, I got a little confused in the midst of this. The incident happened on what day? What day of the week?
Wednesday.
It happened on Wednesday.
17 at 4 o'clock.
On Saturday, you had a meeting at which you all came to an understanding.
Yeah, that's just for me not to protest in the front of their store, and they apologized to me.
Right, personally.
Personally. They apologized in the back, and I said, yeah, your apology is accepted, but I still, the bottom line, I got to have those two people fired because they don't know nothing. I said, I want that lady was laughing at me with the police and the other lady fired.
Now, at that time, did you also ask for money or not?
No, we didn't. We wasn't even talking about no money, no lawyer, no nothing. It was just for me to come from in the front of their store because they was crying.
Right.
I'm talking about with tears.
Right.
They was in there crying, talking about how humiliated this was for both of us.
So on Friday you were going to have a media apology, but that didn't happen.
It didn't happen.
And then on Saturday you had a private apology.
Right.
And then on Tuesday
they spoke to public.
And Tuesday was there a public apology?
Right. And I told them I was going to write up my commands,
right,
and what I want to say, and what I was going to do.
Right.
And this is the bottom line. I say, Tuesday I would tell you everything so it would not go between the courthouse.
So now, on Tuesday, did the media appear here and was there an apology?
The media appeared here and they apologized. But before the media came, we had a little meeting ourselves. That's when I told them, I showed them my compensation letter. I said, now this is what I was going to present all of y'all with, the bottom line.
Right.
I say, because I'm stressed out.
You wrote after Saturday. You wrote it and presented it.
No, I wrote it Saturday. After the meeting Saturday. That's when I wrote it. After the meeting.
Right.
I said that I told him when I come back Tuesday, I have everything written down that I wanted to say. And I said, but I let you see it before the meeting. So when they seen about the compensation, they didn't want that in there. They agreed to pay, but they didn't want it in the paper.
Here's the point of dispute.
Yeah.
They say they weren't sure they were going to agree to pay. You say that they did agree to pay, but they didn't want
the two ladies agreed when me and them was back there and Tony left out the room.
Right.
They agreed to pay from 5 to 10.
Because they say originally you demanded $5.8 million?
I know. I told them I was going to sue them for $5.8 million. I said, you lucky that Tony stopped me from going to the courthouse because I had already filled the papers out. See, now Tony can't stop me. They can't stop me. I will file it.
So they say that they thought about it over the last 24 hours, and they decided against it, and they say that they didn't hang up on you, but you said, have a nice day, before the call ended.
No, when she hung up, she said, talk to my lawyer. And I said, well, have a nice day, and she hung up. That's all it was.
I see.
Yeah, I see. I said, wait a minute, you told me, she said, talk to my lawyer. And I said, well, have a nice day. And if she wasn't so in the big of rushing up, she would have known what I said. At the end,
I
said, have a nice day, and I'll be there.
Actually, they heard what you said.
Okay,
they both said that you said, have a nice day.
Yeah, that's what I told them. After they was finna hang up, they said, talk to my lawyer. I said, well, have a nice day, and they hung up. So now that's what...
I got, talking to Ricky Prynne. Prynne?
Yeah.
And we're hearing that... we spoke to Julie Hendy, as I mentioned before, and... I guess we didn't ask Kathleen if she'd called the police here on you, but apparently that's your perception. You actually saw her do it, or how do you know she called?
No, she called the police, and when the police pulled up and asked what was going on.
She was going to call them. She went
inside,
and the cops showed up. Right,
she said, I'm going to call the police and have you removed.
Well, I think they should have him removed, frankly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because he didn't show up for the meeting.
No, he didn't. He was going to show up.
He would have been on the record.
Rags all day and all night.
And I was
going
to let him be. I had to have somebody because the news. He thought it was at 1.
He's a real mystery.
Yeah,
he doesn't even show up. I mean, I'm very depressed. Yeah.
Yeah,
he started his job yesterday.
Oh,
well, you had a good...
Saturday at 2:35, you tore up the nicely designed signs, and now we've got these cheesy signs that you're holding up.
Yeah, well, see, the cheesy sign is the sign I started with in my mind, and the nice sign was not their disrespect to all shoppers. But the bottom line, her husband was crying, and I told him, this is a show you on my part of how bad I wanted to resolve this problem. I would go outside and tear up all protesting signs out of my friend's hand, and I did it before his eyes. And he said, okay, we'll resolve this Tuesday under all circumstances.
And you're ready to tear up the sign if they come out with...
I'm ready to walk away, because that's what they agreed to. Otherwise, they should have told me all they wanted was a public apology. They should have not agreed to this behind closed doors and when the press wasn't there. See, me and they meet before the press, they agreed to everything I said.
Right.
Now they want to disagree. When it come back down, they stick it and say, well, it's all over. He ain't got no witness. They agreed to it. See what I'm saying?
But I got the papers, the guy who wrote it up and showed it to him before he went out, and they said, we all agree to everything that is on this paper.
How often was money mentioned in the course of this conversation, and who mentioned it?
I told him about a trip. I just asked him, and when they see compensation, they said, oh, yeah, a couple $1,000s. They said, that's what they said. It would look like they had the check must have been already written. Because they said, well, we got a $3,000. They said through. So I'm saying they wasn't bring the money for it up, which I think, anyway, if a man gets stressed out and gets accused of stealing and false arrest, he should be compensated some for his time and his stress and going through all of these motions and changing. Because otherwise, I could have spent 16 months for receiving stolen good for violation of probation. What would they would have been? They wouldn't have said nothing. They wouldn't have come down there and said, well, we saw.
On probation?
Yeah, I'm on probation for doing something I had no business doing.
Nothing you care to discuss at this time?
No, not at this time, but it's just the idea I'm on probation, and they didn't have no feeling when I was telling them, hey, ma'am, if you arrested me.
I know you're on probation.
Yeah, I told them. I told them in the back when they locked me up in the room, I said, you're accusing me of receiving stolen goods. That's a violation of my probation. I said, officer, I'm on probation. I told them my probation officer name and everything. And then, so if I would have went to jail, I'd have had to be violated for receiving.
What's your sense of why this?
It should have been an apology, and they should have gone. The first day, they should have apologized and not arrested me. And they should have
made it. Now they've apologized. Now what's needed is?
Now the apology, they made the apology to me, and now they done went back on their apology 24 hours later after the meeting.
Well, they haven't gone back on their apology. They've gone back on what you consider to be their willingness to compensate.
Well, to me, they went back on their apology because they agreed to everything behind closed doors when me and them had their meeting. They agreed to everything.
Part of the apology was an agreement to compensate. And in not compensating, they're showing their bad faith there, and therefore their apology is not
accepted. Yeah, the apology is not accepted because they're showing their bad faith to me. They're not showing me that they really mean what they said after we prayed to God together. So,
you say you worked at Kmart for 2 years here in Santa Cruz County?
Yes, I did. I worked for Kmart, and it's the same results that happened to me at Kmart.
What kind of work did you do there?
I was the maintenance man.
And you say that there was a problem that developed there?
That was a problem there, too, because I hurt my back helping a lady who had just had surgery, and she fell down in the store, and I picked up, and I got a pop in my back. So I went to the doctor. He said something wrong with my back, so he said, I'm going to exclude you from doing maintenance work and give you light duty. So he gave me a paper to take back to personnel. I give it to personnel. She said, well, Monday, on the 23rd, you come back in and wear a white shirt. So I wore the white shirt, and the manager of K-Mog named Bob Leonard, he told me if I can't do maintenance to get my butt out the store.
Now, were there other black workers up front or not?
It was a lot of black workers worked there, but they was cashier.
What was his problem with having you work as cashier?
Because I was maintenance, and the store got crowded. They said maintenance cart run, maintenance takeout, maintenance this.
So they wanted you to do work?
They wanted me to do all the work, but I wasn't the maintenance man.
Even though you were injured?
I was injured. They wanted me to still do the hard work, and I had a doctor's statement saying it. So he threw me out, so we end up into the protest.
What kind of a protest happened there?
Well, I protest the same way I'm standing out here, saying that he was a racist man because he threw me out of his store, and the two white girls that were sick and they had back problems, he gave them light duty work with no problem. See what I'm saying? And then now we're going through Fair Housing and Employees about it, so they're going to send it through the federal government and see can they straighten that out.
How long did that protest go on?
A week and a half. And the guy from the unemployment office, so having was shopping there, he said, don't worry about nothing, go home and rest, and you'll get a paper in the mail. He took my name down, and he sent me home, and the next thing I know, I was getting a letter from Fair Housing and Employees to come over there and file a complaint.
Has that issue been resolved?
No, it's still in the motion right now. Everything is in the motion. Now this happened to me. Yeah.
Have there been any other occasions when you've had a difficulty and then got into a protest?
Yes, the housing authority.
What happened there?
The same thing. They was wrong. And they settled it because my old lady had signed up for housing maybe December the 7th, 1985. They say they signed up a paper, and here it is, 1992. Mm-hmm. See what I'm saying? They said they signed up a paper, but when the head man named Andrew found out, I was right in protesting because I didn't want she had another baby, and it was a little baby, premature, and we didn't want to sleep under no bridge. And we think she had a right because they just had gave another
right
to have a housing certificate because they had just gave another couple a house within 2 months. And they told me about it because we was working at Lifted, so I feel though my rights have been violated.
And what happened as a consequence of you stood with signs outside?
I had signs outside the housing protesting, and then we sold it. And then they gave my old lady a certificate. And also they gave several other black people a certificate because they had did them so wrong.
Where was it?
on 41st Avenue in Santa Capitola.
So you're no stranger to asserting your right.
I'm no stranger when it comes to my right. That's why I'm standing in the front of Cat and Canary, because I was right. And I told them before they even did this, don't arrest me. They didn't know who they was arresting. See? And I told them.
As of a few days ago, Ricky Prim said he was still going to court on the issue, and I'd heard nothing definitive from either him or Cat and Canary. Hopefully the resolution of this will be revealed in a future Street Chit Sheet, my homeless newsletter. Also, you can perhaps keep tuned to Metro, which did an interesting coverage of the issue a couple weeks ago, one rather favorable to Ricky Prim. Last week, on the other hand, they did a hatchet job on me as a Grumpster Supreme, which is fine, that's par for the Metro, but it would be nice if they would actually cover the issue of the sleeping ban and how it affects the homeless in Santa Cruz. For some reason, they are unwilling to go into this, and hopefully the issue will be brought to a head, well, in the months ahead. Hard to tell, though. It's a difficult one for homeless people to protest around because they are more vulnerable than almost any other group of protesters when they make that protest. Dan Hopkins was recently convicted of 3 sleeping charges. He was the man who co-founded the City Hall sleepers protest last year that lasted for 7.5 months in front of City Hall. Now we're going to hear, instead of Carol Denny, whose tape is rather inaudible, I'm afraid, the Berkeley activist, we're going to hear a Santa Cruz activist and lawyer, Catnip Kate Wells, giving a summation in the courtroom of Tom Kangaroo Kelly, as I call him. Kate speaks eloquently. Kelly spent no time whatsoever considering Kate's arguments and found Hopkins guilty on all 3 counts, sleeping, covering up with blankets, and in camping for a fundamentally First Amendment exercise of his rights in front of City Hall with signs like legalized sleep, signs that individuals like Mike Rotkin and Scott Kennedy actually personally carried away in their eagerness to eliminate this message from public view.
Petition government even through Mr. Rotkin's own words, has refused to address the issue. And in fact, this has caused retaliatory actions against those who advocate for the homeless. I see this as a case not unsimilar to the segregation in the South problem, where the courts were forced to take action because the legislatures failed and refused to take appropriate action. We're talking about issues such as riding on the bus. Riding on a bus is not a life-sustaining function. Sleeping is a basic human right.
Unfortunately, at this point, the Kate Wells tape breaks off. It's a great tape, and I'll try to have it available at some future point for those who are interested in it. In the meantime, we have, as an emergency, Ted Gullickson of Homes Not Jails and the San Francisco Tenants Union. Both these organizations sponsored a rally in the San Francisco Presidio a couple of weeks ago, which I and 64 other people were arrested. I'm going to court next Thursday, facing 2 federal charges of trespass and protesting without a permit in order to reclaim wary housing, that is to say, housing which could be available to homeless people abandoned by the federal government, used one time as military housing. Let's hear Ted talk about this situation. He's eloquent, he's informed, he's worth listening to.
Ted Gullickson, do I have that pronounced properly, Ted?
You do.
And you have been working with the San Francisco Tenants Union and Homes Not Jails both?
That's correct.
For how long?
I've worked with the Tenants Union since 1989 and Homes Not Jails since 1992 when Homes Not Jails began.
Made any progress?
Well, it's difficult. You know, the city is becoming increasingly gentrified, and we're just kind of trying to hold the barriers at jail sometimes. But certainly with Homes Not Jails, we've raised the agenda of housing below a homeless make buildings. And when we began focusing on the Presidio housing back in 1993, at that point in time, use of any housing at the Presidio for people who are homeless totally out of the question and was not even part of the public agenda for discussion purposes. And at least we have reached the point where whether or not wary housing at the Presidio should be used for affordable housing has become probably the top issue at the Presidio
How many people could be housed on the Presidio, let's say, starting with Wery housing and perhaps even looking more ambitiously to other housing, if that housing were turned over to poor people?
Well, if you looked at it ambitiously, there's over 1,000 units of housing at the Presidio. 1,000 units, of course, is quite a lot if you were able to use all of that housing. Most of it is actually family housing. Units are generally two-bedroom, three-bedroom, and even four-bedroom apartments. So you would probably be looking in the neighborhood of 3 people per unit. So the Presidio total could probably house at least 3,000 people easily.
And that would deal with about one-fifth of San Francisco's homeless problem.
Right.
But it would deal with some of it, that's for sure.
And all in one fell swoop, and 3,000 is probably a conservative number. Like I said, these are big units. And the fact that it's so much family housing is very important because the number of homeless families in the city has been it doubled from the end of 1996 to the beginning of 1997.
What's the estimate on the number?
At the end of 96, last quarter of 1996, the city reported 220-something families looking for shelter beds, and in the first quarter of 1997, reported over 450 families looking for a shelter bed.
And in fact, the actual number is probably considerably more than that?
Exactly. These are just people who look for shelter beds. If you add in the people who don't know where to go, or just simply on the streets, or people who are doubled up with some other...
Don't trust the agencies, think the agencies are full already.
Exactly.
Do you have any clearer number that might describe how many families you estimate are looking for shelter?
I don't off the top of my head. I know that number's around, and I've seen it, but off the top of my head, I forget what it is.
Can you give us a sense, historically, of the milestones, if any, that you look at the past with Homes Not Jails and the tenants' union, where you've come from and where you're going?
Where we came from was basically Homes Not Jails. That is, we came from the point of view that there were a lot of vacant buildings in the city that could house a lot of the people who were homeless, and we wanted to begin raising attention to that issue and seeing if some of it could be converted into affordable housing. And while doing that publicly, we also set up a system of opening up and supporting what we call covert squats to actually do it ourselves, recognizing that educating the public and educating the politicians was a long-term goal. We also realized that people need housing today and that we couldn't wait for the politicians. So for the last 5 years, we've been opening up buildings and housing people steadily. Every week we go out and open up vacant buildings and put people in them. So Homes Not Jails has housed a lot of people that way, and we have squats that have lasted virtually since our beginning where people are still living today.
These are covert squats?
So we've been fairly successful on that end, just in a form of direct action where we say, well, nobody else will listen to us, so we'll do it ourselves. But at the same time, our public agenda in terms of educating the city and educating the politicians has been actually pretty successful if you realize that we're in a long-term struggle. Similarly to the Presidio, when Homes Not Jails began, the idea of housing people in vacant buildings and having people who are homeless renovate them under a sweat equity concept and manage them.
Sweat equity, for those who don't know, is...
Sweat equity would be where the people who are going to live in the building do the renovation in exchange for some level of equity in the building and also in exchange for the right to live in that building.
Is there currently a legal provision for converting abandoned buildings to public use or equity use? Or?
That's been one of our difficult barriers in California. You know, generally in America, the idea of property rights is held so very sacred that finding legal power to get these buildings converted has been difficult. We, at one point, had Supervisor Angela Alioto introduce what was called an anti-abandonment ordinance, which would have given the city power to take over some of these vacant buildings and let people who are homeless renovate them and turn them into permanent affordable housing.
There is such a provision in New York City, right?
Yeah, unfortunately, California has even stricter property rights laws than many states, and we have this one law in the state called the Ellis Act, which basically says that a landlord, owner of a rental property, can do whatever they want with that property, and including leaving it vacant, unrented. So our proposed law was ruled unconstitutional by the city attorney, and since then we've been trying to figure out some other way of approaching.
The Ellis Law is a local statute or a state?
That's a state law, California state law. Our ordinance was modeled after one in Seattle, which is constitutional up in Washington, but that same law is unconstitutional in California.
You're talking about the Alioto Abandonment Ordinance? Ted?
Yeah, that law. So so we're still trying to figure out some way to do that. The clear way which could happen would be eminent domain. The city could take a property by eminent domain, in which case they would have to pay the landlord full market value for the property. And given how expensive real estate is in San Francisco, we're trying to avoid that route. Trying to look at some way in which the city can capitalize on the fact that almost all vacant buildings are way behind in their property taxes, have numerous liens on them, and are often public nuisances in the neighborhood where they exist.
Can you estimate the number of such buildings that are actually in that status in the city?
The 1990 census counted 6,500 units. That's not buildings, that's individual units, which would be enough to house. If you used every single one of those units, that would be enough to house every single person who's homeless in the city. We estimate now that the number is considerably less than that because many of the San Francisco vacant units are held vacant for speculative reasons, waiting with landlords and real estate investors awaiting an upturn in the real estate market. And currently in San Francisco, we're at one of our peaks in real estate values, where right now the real estate values are higher than they ever have been. So many of the buildings which were vacant in 1990 and many of the places that we used to squat have now been renovated or rented as the landlords found the opportune time to capitalize on their investment.
Do you have a ballpark estimate of how many buildings there are now or how many units?
I guess it would still be in the neighborhood of 4,000 units.
And how many squats would you say are actually functioning throughout the city? First, that Homes Not Jails has been responsible for, and then second, that you'd estimate exist as a total?
It's difficult to say. Because most of the vacant buildings here are held speculatively empty, the squats tend to be long-term, and while we've had a couple that have lasted for multiple years, at the moment we only have one long-term one. We never have more than six or seven going at any given time, and the squatting what happens in San Francisco outside of Homes Not Jails is difficult to document. I would guess there would be at least 100 other squats happening. That's probably pretty conservative.
Now, in Amsterdam and I guess certain European countries, there's been a much more activist movement around squatting. Is that accurate?
Right.
I know that was true in the 80s. Is that still true today in the 90s?
Yeah, it's generally the squatting movement in Europe is much more active than in the United States, all told. And part of that reason is that this country has a fairly perverse view of property rights, where people in America are grown up to think that somebody's property rights are sacred. And so there's not a lot of community support for squatting. It's not as accepted here as it is in many of the European countries, where they don't have that same sort of belief that property rights exceed all other rights. So that's probably why I say much of what we do at Homes Not Jails is just a long-term struggle of educating people and just hitting home on the point that the rights of human beings are more important than property rights.
And that was Ted Gullickson of the San Francisco Tenants Union and Homes Not Jails recently held a takeover at the demanding the release of housing to homeless people from the Presidio. Finally, a breaking news story. I got a call a couple days ago from a federal public defender in Las Cruces, New Mexico. informing me that the chief police witness against Miguel Balderas, a woman named Kitten Reynolds, was being held there on charges of methamphetamine possession and intent to sell, as well as falsely giving a report to the, presumably the FBI, possibly the police, that a truck of explosives was bound for Albuquerque, New Mexico. The significance of this is that Miss Reynolds is the key witness in the case against Miguel Balderas, accused of trashing City Hall, and in fact convicted of trashing City Hall, if you listen to council members like Scott Kennedy, or the Santa Cruz Sentinel. Balderas has been held essentially on prohibitive bail in jail for the last month and a half. He's still in jail as I speak. He was a high-profile, rather outspoken, and in the eyes of some, rather irresponsible and loose-tongued and flamboyant activist, as was Reynolds. But for the police to use an activist like Kitten Reynolds, who has an history of what appears to be psychotic episodes, hospitalizations across the country, and known false statements to local people, to keep another person in jail is cynical at best, and actually smacks of an attempt to smear the entire homeless movement and repress a lot of us. More on this, hopefully, in the forthcoming pages of the Street Shit Sheet. You have been listening to Bathrobes Pier's Broadsides. I've been your host, Bathrobes Pier Robert Norse. If you have any comments on this show, please give me a call at 423-4833. That's 423-HUFF. Also call that line to get periodic updates on numerous homeless civil rights topics. I am not homeless myself. I have been in the past. I'm concerned with civil rights for poor people and homeless people. An upcoming project that I understand is soon to be happening is an initiative to put the sleeping ban on the ballot, and a series of organizational meetings is due to happen around this issue. Call 423-HUFF to get more information. If you've enjoyed this show, if you have anything you want to contribute to future news broadcasts, whether this be on my show or another show, and I guess, as I said, this show really is, it's gone. I'm, again, going to try to transfer this into a print medium. But Free Radio Santa Cruz certainly has interest in passing on news stories. You can give them a call, or you can leave messages with me, and I will pass on the news to them. Again, the number is 423-4833-423-HUFF. If you have enjoyed this show and you find the issues on this show relevant to you or of concern to you, pick up the latest issue of Street Spirit. That's a homeless monthly newspaper. You can get it downtown from homeless vendors. Costs a buck and well worth it. Check in front of the Cinema 9 across from the old Cooper House right near Pete's Coffee and Noah's Bagels. Or just give me a call at 423-HUFF.